Welcome to the Spodcasters, the only online sports talk show devoted exclusively to University of Kansas athletics. I'm Kevin Romery, and while most of you might know me as the 6 News Sports Director, in my spare time, I'm a Spodcaster. Each week, you can join me, Journal World Sports Editor Tom Keegan, and show host Andy Samuelson on the Spodcasters at KUSports.com. We offer our creative takes on the latest developments in the KU sports world, plus we offer special guests such as Journal World KU basketball beat writer Gary Bedore, whose insight on the Jayhawk basketball world is unparalleled. Spodcasters, sports talk, online, anytime.
Welcome back to the Spodcasters, a special Sunday edition. Today I'm joined by Journal World editor Tom Keegan. Well, let's say sports
editor. Thanks for
editor.
The promotion. Too bad I don't know anything about the real world, and I'm all sports, but so I don't think I'm qualified for that promotion.
KU basketball beat writer Gary Bedore. And KU football beat writer Ryan Wood.
Where's my promotion?
Woody.
Oh, I can only give out one at a time.
Editor-in-chief, Ryan Wood. Let's do it.
Special edition of the Spodcasters. How about a special win for Kansas State yesterday? Not probably what most Jayhawks thought going into that game. Talk about the streak ender.
Well, Gary Bedore called it when early in the second half. He said they're in trouble. I said, what are you talking about? He predicted a K-State victory. He just felt it. K-State did a real good job of screening and perfect timing on their screens. KU just didn't hit the big shots and were so confused against that zone they didn't take big shots. And K-State hit all the big shots. Stat of the game. If we can put these three names together without looking at the sheet, Ryan Wood.
I'm looking around.
How many points would you guess that Moody, Giles, and Hawkins, who played a combined 40 minutes, scored?
Well, Giles had zero, I think, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Probably about the same amount as all of us. How about zero?
I don't think anyone scored anything.
That's right. In 40 minutes combined, Moody, wow. Giles, and Hawkins, zero. Two of those guys are seniors.
Oh, man.
And one is sophomore.
That's not good. And what I want to know, Gary, you've been around a little longer than us. How long have you seen this Bruins? Gone up to 31 games. When did you start thinking, okay, it's got to end? One of these
I knew in the second half when early in the second half, Moody put up a 19-footer, missed it badly. That's not the shot self wanted. And I thought if his mind isn't in this game, then what does that mean for the younger guys? And KU could have scratched out a win when Russell hit that three to tie it at 50. But once they let K-State come back, they had all the confidence in every shot Diarra or any of those guys put up were going to go in. They let them off the hook completely. And today they're feeling bad about it because now they got to go to Missouri where they're not going to be favored. They could have beat and should have beat K-State, and now they're in a bind. But I wasn't positive, but when Moody put up that long shot, I thought, wow. Right after halftime, Self probably yelled at him about what he needed. Christian put up this long jumper, and their minds weren't in it.
Yeah, a lot of us wondered at game 31 last year in the Big 12 tournament if that was going to be the last one of the streak because we knew – what there Kansas was going to lose. We knew K-State was, you know, hanging around a lot of these games the last couple of years here. And there was a lot of wondering, is 31 going to be the last one? It turned out to be the case.
Well, Self said they were lucky to win three last year, and you really look back on it without Simeon and Miles, they probably did get a couple, you know, that they maybe stole away there.
Well, I remember right before the season started, I said to Self, you know your team better than anybody because you're with them every day in practice. Is there anything that you still don't know about them? Any question you still have about them? And he said, yeah, the number one question would be, can we win close games? Can we close out games? Can we finish them? And so far the answer is absolutely no.
0-for-4.
No Keith Langford. You know, he was a money shooter. And even like Alex Galindo against Texas A&M last year, I think hit a big shot there at the end of the game. They don't have a guy like that this year.
He said that, too. They don't have the go-to guy. It looked like Robinson, you know, tried to get in the lane there, but that second one maybe, you know, should have been a three anyway. He said he tried to, just maybe not, you know, you probably need Rush to be that go-to player.
Yeah, he's got to develop into that. Yesterday, K-State played him on his right hand, which Kentucky tried to do and couldn't do. Brandon has a good move where he crosses over to his left, sucks the defender over there, and then goes back to his right. Yesterday, the K-State defenders didn't fall for that bait. They just stayed on his right hand, and that's going to be the way everybody's going to try to play him. It's not easy. It's not easy to not fall for the bait, but That's the way they're going to play them, and they're going to see a lot of zones, too. They did nothing against the zone defense. It's spread out 2-3 zone.
There'll be plenty of that tomorrow against Missouri. You can bet on it. But, yeah, you look back to, you know, who's going to make these big shots at the end. You think back, Nevada, they gave the ball to Hawkins. St. Joe's, they gave it to Micah Downs, that kind of out of necessity with the shooting. And now they're trying Russell Robinson. They got to find somebody, and they got to find somebody quick because there's going to be a lot of close games here in the Big 12.
Instead of maybe, you know, you knew the streak was going to end at one time, is there more frustration, not that the streak stopped, but, you know, this team now has a bunch of questions again? Is it funny how just one game, you know, they're cruising along, blow out Kentucky, blow out Colorado, everybody feels real good. This is a tournament team, guaranteed maybe they're right there, second, third in the league. Now it's like, oh, one bad loss. Are they going to get to the tournament again? Just everything completely turns around.
It is amazing because when they're going well, their defense is so tough. And their fast break is so good. But when they face a team like K-State, whose big men run well, and they were able to get back on D, and they throw out that zone defense, and that caused them all sorts of trouble. And it's weird. But I think the main problem with this team is scoring in the half court, obviously. And when you think about it, the guys they play, they don't have good three-point shooters. Rush is a pretty good three-point shooter. He's been real good so far, but he'll probably settle down to about 40%. And, you know, Downs and Case are their other good three-point shooters, but they don't play, and they don't have a good low post score. Sasha Khan is, but he misses so many bunnies, and he's not great from the free throw line. Giles is not a low post scorer. Julian Wright is not a low post scorer. Christian Moody is not a low post scorer. So where does that leave? That leaves slashing. They have good slashers, Brandon Rush. And Russell Robinson's a pretty good slasher, and Mario Chalmers has developed into a real good driver, but it's just not enough.
Yeah, you look at the three-point totals from the Kansas State game. Russell Robinson, 2 of 6. Mario, 2 of 8. Brandon Rush, 1 of 3. 0 of 1s for three guys, and it led up to 5 of 20, and, you know, that was a deficiency.
And everybody, you know, when you hear all they're running the zone, everybody thinks, oh, you hit threes to break a zone. That's not necessarily has to be the case if you have that inside game. But they didn't have the shooting or the inside game. Were you more surprised, though, that, you know, Case didn't get back in there or that Micah didn't play at all?
Well, Micah played poorly with his fingers wrapped together, so I'm thinking that's who he is with an injured hand. Maybe he's not that good when he's injured. Eventually, though, if he can get healthy, stay healthy, I think this team definitely needs him.
Rush played too many minutes, too, like Self said. I watched the replay last night on TV, and that three he put up late was terrible, and he was tired.
You know who else played? That's a great point, Gary. And you know who else played too many minutes is Mario Chalmers played 34. For him, that broke a career season-high career high.
Yeah, he did not. He didn't do well at the end of the game either.
They were both gassed.
Self admitted it to the press after the game, but Brandon can't play 39 minutes, but he was about their only three-point threat late, and they didn't take the three. Russell drove in twice, didn't kick it back out. On the replay, it showed Brandon was wide open on one of those, I believe. So,
and their zone made it tough to hit threes because they spread it out.
Yeah,
so
that was kind of the unconventional zone. They spread it out and were quick enough to get it around, too.
Gary, you mentioned you watched the replay, but you didn't self-promote where you watched it on a Sunflower Broadband Channel 6.
Yeah, Greg Gurley.
And, of course, Kevin Romery's not with us tonight. That's why you got the B team, which is me.
Ryan Wood, along with Gary Bedore, Tom Keegan, and Andy Samuelson.
It was interesting to watch that because, you know, the result of the game, and Gurley and Kevin are watching it, and the lead's, you know, dissipating. And it's funny to watch a game when you know the outcome.
Yeah, because Greg even mentioned, I watched the opening, you know, how they talk back and forth. I don't know what that is in TV terms. I'm a print guy. But talking back and forth, and Greg Gurley kind of forecasted that this could be a tough day for KU, and it certainly was after that first half. And, you know, I thought both teams played bad in the first half. I think it's pretty obvious that they did. And
although for
I
a stretch.
The fact that it was an 8-point game at halftime really spelled trouble.
It could have been 16, like Sosa. Yeah. Yeah, for a stretch, KU played great. That 5-minute stretch where Mario Chalmers was just on fire, getting a steal every time down, and really he was terrific. But
and that followed a pitiful, pitiful stretch before bounced the ball out of bounds, and that came the TV.
They should have blew him out. It was a 12-point game, and I think they missed two straight threes. If one of those goes in, it's 15-point game. you know, it should have been like the Kentucky game. But
well, but you hate to have to rely on blowouts yeah. all the time. They're going to have to learn how to win close games.
And they haven't yet. I mean, you take out the Arizona game, they've had chances to win three of the four with one last shot and then a couple possessions against K-State. What's it going to take? Is it, you know, a win against Missouri, or is this?
You wonder if this team's so gutted from losing all these seniors last year that they don't know how to win anymore. And as far as the close game goes, and one thing that a lot of these athletes will say is that we got to put a foot on their throat when the going gets tough. And this team really isn't doing that in the close situations. And they, you know, they just got to learn how to. And I think it'll come eventually. But time's running out on this season. You know, we're getting right into the meat of it, and they need to learn how to do this fast.
You know, it's funny that the old players are the least talented players, which you don't want, and the most aggressive players, like Russell Robinson, is not afraid to take over at the end of a game, but he's not one of the more talented scorers on the team. So everything is sort of in a weird balance right now, in a weird place.
Isn't it kind of funny, like we were talking, that you know they had the two big wins, but now after this one loss where Moody had 18-0, that just there's so many still question marks, and nothing's really been decided. And here you already are a Big 12 play with games you got to start winning.
Right, and you got to start winning them is right, and maybe because this team has trouble on final possessions, and three of those four games that came down to final possessions there were blocked shots, which is just amazing when you think about it. So maybe what Self has to do for this particular team is save a timeout. Keep a timeout in his pocket, figuring they're going to need to be organized at the end.
But yeah, I didn't see how they ran out of timeouts. I don't remember when he used them all. But
I don't either.
They're all of a sudden, there's none left, and that was disastrous too.
And you look around the league, and there's a lot of close scores from Saturday, you know. Oklahoma barely getting a win, and then Missouri losing on a three-pointer, too. It's just going to be – those are the kind of games they're going to have to learn how to win. Well, let's talk about Missouri game. Obviously, a much more bigger contest now. They're coming off a loss. They've been playing really well, just like Kansas. What's this game mean, I guess?
Well, this is huge. I haven't seen Missouri this year. Gary, maybe you've seen them, and certainly you've seen them in the past. How do they match up, do you think?
Oh, I think the fact that it's there, KU's going down. I mean, they're not going to beat them. They got McKinney and Gardner who have been around, and KU's young, and the crowd's going to be crazy. It's going to be their only sellout of the year. And they dug this hole for themselves by losing to K-State, and they're in deep trouble tomorrow.
Kansas had that stretch with Aaron Miles, I think, won at Columbia three times during his career, and that's just
pretty impressive.
So rare to go into Columbia and win like that, because Kansas never has in the past. And
especially with probably tomorrow with Rush, you're going to have a lot of Missouri fans on him.
Oh, they'll certainly be all over him, especially knowing Big Brother and knowing that he had the chance to go to Missouri and said no to it. So they are.
But is that going to make him play better or worse? How do you read Brandon Rush? I don't necessarily think that he is a super emotional player.
No,
you look
not.
At his expressions, he's pretty stoic during the game.
No matter the case, he's going to... You know, I don't think the crowd's going to have any effect on how he plays. Who knows how he's going to play, but I don't think the Missouri crowd's going to have anything to do with that. If anything, these guys know how the Antlers act and everything of that sort.
Okay, you played well at Colorado, and they ran well that mm-hmm. game, and everybody thought the running game was back, and then it was nothing against Kansas State. So the fact that they can't shoot very well from the outside, that running game's going to have to be going, and who knows tomorrow. I mean, the crowd's going to be crazy. I can't imagine the Missouri fans, you know, being dead tomorrow. So I sense big trouble. The big men of KU are going to have to play better, especially C.J. Giles. Who knows? Self might not let him play much after that 10-minute.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many weeks have we talked about, hey, we really need something out of C.J. here, and yet 10 minutes, scoreless again. Really, the big men didn't give a whole lot yesterday.
I'm not going to spell doom for Kansas right now, because I think Kansas is an unpredictable team. I think Missouri's an amazingly unpredictable team under Quinn Snyder. Every day out, you don't know what you're going to get out of those guys. So I would think Kansas has a more uphill battle to win this game on the road in the Page Center, Mizzou Arena, whatever they call it now. But, you know, this they're two unpredictable programs at this point. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen.
You really don't. And I wouldn't count out KU either. It was a brutal finish yesterday. But man, they looked very good for a stretch there. And nobody wants to hear that after losing to K-State. No. But the fact is, Mario Chalmers and Russell Robinson are pretty good defensive guards. And if you've got, even if they blow past you when you gamble, if you've got C.J. Giles standing there ready to block a shot, but C.J. was on in a fog yesterday, so that's why he was on the bench. He can't be in any more of those fogs if he thinks he's ever going to be an NBA player. Especially I don't care about that they judge on potential.
He had one shot, missed it, one rebound, one foul, one turnover in 10 minutes. That's not NBA material, not right now.
No, Sasha Khan, 8 points, 9 boards in 21 minutes. We only remember the bunnies he missed. He rushes as if he's 6'1 instead of 6'11, but he had a pretty productive game for the most part in there.
It was quiet. It was quiet because I don't recall many of these points or rebounds.
I remember the stretch where they were just feeding him, and he would either dunk or get fouled and then go to the foul line and make 2 of 5.
Mm-hmm. 2 of 5, and including one air ball, which we will forget about because that wasn't pretty.
You know, I've seen air balls, but that was like 5 feet short.
A foot or two short. But at least he hit rim on the second one. Sometimes you get... Who was the NBA player that airballed 2 in a row?
Probably Brent Dudley.
Yeah.
Remember what a horrible free throw shooter he was? Of course, Wilt was a horrible free throw shooter, except for the night he scored 100.
Right.
Allegedly.
He hit like 28 of 32, allegedly. Yeah.
No film on that game.
It's somewhere.
Where was it? Where was the game played?
Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Yes, indeed. Wow. Well before you were born.
Well before I was born. I know my trivia, though. I know it.
K-State, will they make the NCAA tournament and save Woldridge's job? They got a good starting five.
They do.
Now, you look at the Big 12, allegedly, three coaches I can think of, people kind of think either they make the tournament or they're gone. Yeah. Collier at Nebraska, which I don't buy that. I don't think he has to make the tournament. Do you, Gary?
It's hard to tell there what that AD's thinking. I think maybe.
Really?
I don't think they like him there.
Quinn Snyder at Missouri. And obviously, Woldridge at K-State.
Okay. I'd say Quinn definitely has to do something just because they've been so underachieving the past few years with the talent he's had.
Ever since their Elite Eight run when they almost beat Oklahoma to go to the Final Four, it's been kind of downhill ever since.
At least he's going down with a fight. His quotes this year have been great. He's shown a lot of personality.
He was pretty colorful on media day from what I read.
Yeah, and I guess lately he's been good again.
Yeah, so I've always liked Quinn as a person. I just, you know, he's not getting the job done lately. You know, he's 2 straight NITs from Missouri. That fan base doesn't like him. Doesn't like him or Gary Pinkel right now, but they're kind of putting up with him for now.
Let's say they don't make the tournament. Let's say Quinn Snyder gets fired. What happens to Quinn Snyder? What becomes of him? Here's what I envision. I envision him going to Mike Krzyzewski, and Krzyzewski can look like the real paternalistic, nurturing father helping get Quinn's coaching career back on its feet.
Does he want to crawl back, though, after maybe not having much success in Missouri, going back to where he came from? And I can see him going to a small, you know, like what Doherty did, going to Florida International, Florida Atlantic type
takes
school.
A year off, does the TV
does the
gig, and then comes back.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the route for coaches who want to get back in the game. But that's my guess.
Gary?
TV for a year. He's a good-looking guy. TV.
Except those bug
and
eyes.
Maybe NBA will have him as an assistant after that. And
I know my mother thinks he's good-looking. So
I think
Gary's not alone.
He'd be a good
And I hear
TV,
your
I
mother's
think.
Good-looking. Brian, but it's a story for another day.
That guy from Vermont is a TV guy now. Tom Breton, isn't he?
Oh, he was one of the most colorful guys I've ever talked to. He was just great.
But I mean, I think
to.
He's on ESPN.
He's on ESPN. He helps out in the studio and everything. And
I haven't heard him do a game or even in the studio yet, but he was the closest thing to Al McGuire since Al McGuire.
Absolutely.
Woldridge will be taken care of, too. He'll be an NBA assistant again if he gets fired.
Why? Does he have connections
Tim
in the league?
Floyd.
That's true.
He'll be all right.
What are you talking
even
about?
Even though Floyd's at USC now, but he was a Bulls assistant. He'll be fine, too.
You were talking about K-State making the NCAA tournament. Probably 2 games ago, Kentucky-Colorado, there's probably very little doubt in a lot of Kansas fans' minds that they're in. But now you lose to K-State, and you have a very questionable game tomorrow. 1-1 after the league. What's your prediction, Tom? Will they get in this year? Is it too early to speculate?
It's never too early to speculate. That's what sports doing. Talk is all about.
That's what podcasters are all about.
That's right. You project the future. I think they're going to get in. It's not going to be easy because the Big 12 is not an easy conference. But it's not a loaded conference this year, certainly. There's only one team that should be ranked. There are two, Oklahoma. I don't know why Oklahoma is ranked. I don't vote for them. But really, there are no dogs other than Baylor because of Baylor's youth and sanctions that kept Baylor from playing a non-conference schedule. Other than that, Texas Tech is starting to play better. They're not that good, but where are the easy wins on that schedule? On the other hand, where are the unwinnable games? Right. At Texas, period.
Right. And
at Okie State, probably, because of that crowd.
It's going to be a tough game.
I think it's just a different world there.
KU has in its favor, if it comes to that, is that the NCAA will look favorably on them for the way they travel, the tradition, the prestige.
Everyone says that. I'm not buying that.
Really?
I definitely agree with Wood on that. But you got to also remember the one of Kansas' wins doesn't count. They're only sitting at 9 wins right now. They got to win
9-5.
I think they at least have to win 9. 18, 18 wins probably get you in. If that, maybe they have to win one tournament game, but that still means you have to do 8, 9, 10 wins in the conference.
And let's look at those 5 losses right now. How many of those teams are in the top 25 at the moment?
None.
Because, well, I'm projecting because Arizona's going to fall out.
Right.
Arizona was in the top 25, but they got swept up in against the Oregon schools. So they'll fall out. Nevada has fallen out a while ago, a few weeks ago. And the other 3 losses are to unranked teams. So that's not boding well for them.
So their losses are looking worse and worse, and so are their quality wins, really, when you look at – well, Cal's still probably their biggest win right now because Kentucky keeps dropping games.
Kentucky hasn't won since, I don't think.
How about that, though, yesterday, the 3 winningest teams in college basketball history all losing at home for the first time
ever. And UCLA
ever.
Got beat at home, right?
Yeah, that's crazy stuff.
The fifth winningest. It's one of those days, I guess, one of those days.
You can't drop home games like KU did yesterday. If they want to make the tournament and do well in the Big 12, you got to win the home games. And
but really,
right now they are probably
nobody's winning home games in the Big
12. But if they want to have a KU type season, you just can't drop a game like that, because now you go to Missouri, you probably get beat. You're looking at 1-2
Man,
all of a sudden.
I don't know about that. Probably get beat by Missouri.
Nostradamus over there. So Gary, your prediction, they're not making the tournament this year?
No, I think they'll make it.
Just close.
I think eventually eventually they'll click and start. They did win 7 in a row, and it's easy to get down on them after one loss, but that was not one of the ones you expect to lose, because at K-State, why are they going to win there now?
They're going to win that game. They're going to be so fired up. They're going to believe that K-State is a good team, and they're going to go there and they're going to blow their doors off.
I was 3 years old last time they lost to Manhattan.
What were you doing that day?
I don't even know.
Man, you're old, Wood.
Not remembering anything, so.
Well, is this just going to be a team that, every given game and every given situation, we're going to be like, we just don't know till it happens, huh?
No. I'll know every time.
No, right. I was about to say, this is the most unpredictable team I remember here, so I definitely agree with you, man.
Yeah, let me go back to one point, Gary, to see if you believe with Ryan and most people I talk to, that KU will have some sort of advantage if they're on the bubble. I don't buy that. I think that's selling the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee short, and I just don't buy it. You?
Especially if a lot of teams in your league are ahead of them. You've
got to be able to justify it.
Yeah, if they're fifth, sixth in the league or whatever. No, I don't
buy
that either.
Not only will KU make it, but they'll play close to home. And what, Dallas? Is that the closest one this year?
In a pod.
What would be the closest?
I think it's Dallas, if I remember right.
I haven't examined them all lately.
But if they're sitting at fourth in the conference, 18-12 or whatever, and a team like Iona has the same record, you're going to tell me that Kansas
not
is not
the same record. I mean, Iona obviously plays in a weaker conference. They'd have to have a much better record.
Let's just say
the same.
Alabama, Kentucky, even teams like that. I think maybe not Kentucky because it's another tradition school, but Kansas would have to have some kind of advantage.
No, I'm not buying it.
I think so, Andy. I really do.
Then why did St. Joe?
I've seen the history. I've seen Kansas as a 4 or 5 seed go play at Kemper Arena 2 years ago when they had no business being close to home. I've seen them. They went down to Oklahoma City last year when they were.
I'll buy placement, where they are, because that involves tickets and all that. I don't buy being in the field, though. If they don't deserve to be in the field, I don't think they'll be in the field.
Kansas. They get viewers. They sell tickets. They get viewers. And, what's the NCAA about? It's money. It's a lot of it's money.
But I think on those bubble teams, you really have to justify, because there's so much scrutiny that I really think, well, that, hopefully it won't come down to that, but yeah. I really don't think their name's going to help them.
That 1 year, Colorado was 10-6 and didn't get in.
That's true. That's true.
If KU's 10-6 in the league, obviously they're in. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely.
But
I still think 500
or lower.
Second. Okay, I still say they finished second.
Let's say Kansas is the fourth seed in the Big 12 and against, say, Wichita State's the fourth, you know, Wichita State is the fourth seed in the Missouri Valley. You're going to tell me the Kansas. It's going to be harder for Wichita State to get in coming out of the Valley with four teams, even if it's a better league this year than it would be for Kansas to come in. That's
but
just
it's not a better league. I'm not buying that.
When's the Valley ever gotten four teams in the
tournament? Exactly, but I'm just saying, you know.
Well, this year maybe Southern Illinois, Creighton, Wichita State. Help me with a fourth. Northern Iowa, yeah. Maybe all four of those teams get in there.
Good conference. It is a good conference.
It could be better in the Big 12 this year. You don't know.
It's not as deep.
Probably not as deep. The bottom teams aren't
as good.
I'd give Wichita State as a third seed in the Mo Valley. I could see them, Wichita State, beating Kansas head-to-head. Kansas is a number six team in the Big 12, and Kansas still gets in ahead of Wichita State because they're Kansas and they're Wichita State.
Sadly.
And that's our Wichita moment brought to you by Andy Chan.
And speaking of sad moments in KU athletics, I'm sure KU football coach Mark Mangino had to be a little upset this week, only losing an assistant, but a big-time Texas recruiter and Dave Doran. Let's talk about that situation.
Yeah, I think the recruiter part's the part that really stings. And if you look at the commitment list, there's about 23 commitments right now for Kansas football. Dave Doran recruited 10 of them here. And that's, you know, 45% is pretty high for one coach out of six that are out there, you know, combing the ranks and looking for these prospects.
So do you think that hurts them for the future? Or do you think there could be some defections among those 10.
I'm shocked. There's been 23 commitments, and not one of them's defected yet. And it's getting to be that time of the year where these kids start believing all the hype that these other coaches are spewing on them. They're wanting to read on about themselves in the papers and everything. And they start backing out saying, I'm opening up my recruiting again. It hasn't happened yet. And I think this gives these 10 Texas, they're mostly from Texas, these 10 kids another reason to start looking around again. So
maybe those kids,
I can't see them falling into Wisconsin, but I can see it as being an excuse to open up the recruiting.
Well, let's
again,
let's hope not. That'd be bad news and bad timing and everything else. But those kids are from Texas. Maybe they were at the Fort Worth Bowl. That maybe they saw the big turnout of KU fans, and maybe they realized, wait a minute, this big a turnout, this big a route in a bowl game, Kansas football is on the verge of becoming better than it ever was on a consistent basis.
There is a lot of reasons for these kids to stay put with their commitment and sign on February 1st and be done with it. But, you know, there was seven or eight kids last year that said, no way, wait a minute, I'm going somewhere else. They were going to places like Tulsa, Eastern Michigan. One kid backed out and went to Eastern Michigan.
Did KU soften on that kid? He felt that
you never
not
know.
Just he
I mean,
backed out on them. Maybe KU backed out on him.
Well, I mean, once you get a commitment, that's you know, these, you know, the KU will count on you in most cases.
Okay.
And so that wasn't the case at all. I mean, recruiting is such an inexact science that you never know
in football
why. Oh, absolutely.
Not basketball, but football.
You never know why these guys are picking which schools. I mean, there was a big stud, Burley, just committed to SMU, a program that's, you know, been on life support.
Maybe
for
likes
the last
horses.
12 years, and you know, but the reason is his brother played there, his family's close by, and there's just so many different reasons to pick a school.
Number one recruit for KU.
Number one recruit right now would be Anthony Webb, a high school
cornerback
out of Dallas, who's just a stud.
A D-back. Could he come in
and
start right away?
Rivals. They might need him to. They might need him to contribute right away. I don't know about starting.
So it's pretty unusual for a defensive back, isn't
it? Yeah, it's pretty unusual, most unusual for linemen to get in play right away just because their bodies aren't ready for the speed of Division I, their size and everything like that. But, you know, besides that, I would say that a cornerback, even making the field on defense or offense, most of these true freshmen go into special teams right away. And, you know, Russell Brorson was the only one of the true freshmen who didn't this year. He played, was a second string tight end. So, I mean, it's hard for any freshman to crack the field in a program that's really getting some good depth, like KU is in a lot of places. But
the secondary is a real
they
deal.
They don't have a real
Kemp
good depth.
Kemp and Tlaib, are they the only ones back?
No, Kemp's a safety, and Rodney Harris is coming back after taking a year off. But the thing is, Tlaib's the only cornerback they have returning, and they signed two JUCO guys. One of them might not even be ready because he's not developed enough physically. So Anthony Webb has a chance to contribute, I think. And, you know, they're going to throw them all in the pile in the spring and in summer and say, win a job.
You know, second best recruit, Sharp?
Sharp, statistically, obviously, he's right up there. But
from Salina.
Right, but I don't think he's as touted, you know, on a national scale for his tools as some other guys.
So you talk about Webb might have a chance to come in and start. Why would Gordon have not had the same opportunity to play cornerback?
I'd say contribute.
Okay, well, I meant, you know, to make, you know.
Well, and the reason is that, you know, wide receiver is a position that's not really deep either. And KU just got a commitment from another one today, and I can't even pronounce his first name. I think it's Tertavian. Tertavian Ingram. He's from Tampa, Florida, and Earl Mosley's first Florida recruit. So, yeah, there's a lot of positions up for grabs as far as cornerback and wide receiver. And you know, Charles Gordon being able to play both is gonna hurt, you know, that depth for sure. But, you know, Mangino didn't want to promise Gordon, okay, I'll play a cornerback and exclusively, and you have my word on that.
You do that, you open the floodgates, everyone starts coming in, I want to do this, I want to do that.
And players are making demands that Mangino shouldn't have to worry about.
Football's a different animal.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I certainly understand both sides of the argument there as far as Charles Gordon, but some of these young guys are going to step right in right away. And
I don't understand. I think he's nuts for going. I don't think he's going to be picked on the first day if he's drafted at all, and I just think he would have –
Well, I think
had a blast playing football at Kansas.
I think his stock was higher a year ago.
Yeah, and
that's one thing you had to keep in mind.
You wonder though, because then he goes to the combines, and then your stock can plummet.
He won't.
And they're going to look at how short he is. They'll measure him. They'll realize he's not as tall as the program.
They'll measure him
says.
In bare feet too. Darren Sproles went down about 3 inches when
there
they
you
measured
go.
Him to about 5'5" I think he was. But you know, he's doing all right as a return man in San Diego. I don't think Gordon and Darren Sproles are in the same breath as far as return man. Because Sproles is so much stronger, but Gordon, I mean, we saw some punt returns he had this year, and they were just amazing. A chance,
and
never
also
broke one for a touchdown.
He has his degree. I mean, I'm kind of see it both ways. That why come back and risk the injury factor?
That's the only valid point. Risking an injury is the only valid point, and he does have his degree.
And like as you know, that I've mentioned this that we spoke at an alumni association event, and I mentioned this when you're not a top five pick like Matt Leinart, you know, soon after his junior year. He went to an insurance, you know, and took out an insurance claim. He got $1 million. He'd get $1 million or so if he got hurt. Gordon can't do that because he's not going to make that much money to be able to, you know, even afford taking out one of these claims and protecting himself. So, I mean, there's a lot of arguments as to why Gordon made the right decision. I think, you know, is it going to pay off? We'll see. But I certainly see why he'd want to.
I'd like to know who pays the premiums on these insurance things Matt Leinart gets. I'd like to see that. That'd be a nice little thing to look into.
Yeah, it would be, you know.
Well, how about another?
I think it's one of those things where here's your insurance, you can pay me back in a year. And then, you know,
sounds like
way,
a violation there, though.
Yeah.
Another question for Doran, though. You wonder how much recruiting Wisconsin had in Texas. Doesn't this just make another team that, hey, Kansas has to compete against,
absolutely,
right? Because he had a – he had his foot definitely in the door down there.
I think this is going to hurt Kansas more than, you know, a normal assistant leaving you'd think would, because Wisconsin doesn't have much of a presence in Texas, and they're going to now.
Here's a wild thought. Lou Perkins has been known to spend money when they need to spend money to get guys. So he spent a lot of money to get Bonnie Hendrickson. How about they get a top Texas assistant, double his salary, and make him the recruiting coordinator? And you keep that Texas connection hot.
Well, yeah, they got a guy, Tim Beck, who the wide receivers coach. He was a very well-respected high school coach last year in Texas, and he's already gotten his foot in the door. So I don't think the Texas connection is lost by any stretch, because Mangino and Clint Bowen recruits a little bit down there when he's not recruiting Kansas. And you know, they got guys who know their way around there. I just think adding another horse to the race in Wisconsin, because I can't see Doran not recruiting Texas still, because it's such a hotbed for talent. That's not going to help Kansas at all.
That's why it's good to see Earl Mosley get a recruit from Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, they've really been having trouble with Florida lately. So, you know, to get one today in Ingram, it's only going to help open that up a little bit, because, you know, they need to find the talent wherever it is.
How many stars do rivals have Ingram?
Three, which is what most of the players have been. And, you know, when Mangino first got here, they were getting a bunch of twos and some JUCO players that maybe had baggage with them that were 3 and 4. So I think you can definitely tell that the talent they're bringing in is a lot better than it ever has been under Mangino. And I think one guy we were talking to the other day, we're talking about the Terry Allen recruits and who KU would beat out, you know, schools for services these players is, you know, Division II schools.
Multi-directional schools.
Stephen F. Austin, you know, schools like
Northeast,
that.
Northeast, Southwest.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can definitely tell the talent is getting thicker and better at Kansas football.
Well, that's going to wrap up another edition of this podcast. But before we go, let's just take a prediction tomorrow night. Missouri, KU, what do you think, Tom?
I'm going to go with KU, even though I haven't seen Missouri play this year. I think KU will be on top of their game. It's game.
Missouri will win the game, but KU will probably – KU will come back and beat them here when they play in Allen.
Missouri, 101 to 105 overtimes.
That'll be do wonders for our deadline.
Yeah.
6 p.m. Central Time start, though. We like that.
That's very nice. Very nice.
I'm going to have to go with Missouri. I'm not going to go with 5 overtimes, though.
Have fun, man.
All right, that's going to do it for us, the Spodcasters. Tom Keegan, the man, the myth, the legend, Gary Bedore, and football beat writer Ryan Wood. I'm Andy Salmon. We'll see you next week.
Like what you just heard? Then spread the word about the Spodcasters. It's sportscasting meets podcasting on your computer. No iPod, no problem. You can still get the Spodcasters online. Just point your mouse to kusports.com, click on the Spodcasters logo in the right column, then kick back and listen. Spodcasters, sports talk, online, anytime.